We're in Deuteronomy chapter 6, and the first nine verses, and as you know, especially when you get to the fourth verse, probably more has been written about that particular section of Scripture than almost any place else in the Old Testament. The first three verses of chapter 6 form kind of a bridge between 6 verse 4 and chapter 5. Chapter 5, Moses again proclaims or talks about the 10 words, and the concluding verses of that passage talk once again about the covenant that God has made and the promised blessings for obedience to that covenant. And then he begins to talk in chapter 6 to reemphasize those basic principles. And so we'll begin here at verse 1. And it goes, Vezot ha-mitzvah ha-chukim ve-ha-mishpatim asher tzivah Yahweh Elohekem lelamed et kem. Vezot ha-mitzvah is used as a predicate adjective here. Notice, and this is the mitzvah, normally translated commandment, and a lot of your translations will have that, but you can also almost translate it in this context as this is the charge. In other words, he's going to give kind of the general principle and the words that follow, ha-chukim, the statutes, ve-ha-mishpatim, and the judgments can be understood as being in apposition to mitzvah. So mitzvah is the charge, namely the specifics, the chukim and ve-ha-mishpatim, which make up the charge. Those words are found at the beginning of 5 verse 1, and also, I think, Deuteronomy 12, in which he begins to deal specifically with just what those are. But at this point, he's talking in general terms about the principle that he wants Israel to listen to. So he goes, this is the mitzvah, the principle, namely the chukim, the statutes, and the judgments, Asher tziva Yahweh Elohekem, which Yahweh your God commanded. Tziva is a PL, perfect third masculine singular from tzava, a very common word, which Yahweh commanded. And then you have the PL infinitive, le lamed et kem, to teach you. Tzava is one of those words that takes an infinitive as an object. And it's one of those words that can have two, it's a construction in which you can have two objects for that word, one being an infinitive. And the same thing occurs a lot of times in Greek as well. So that if you have, with words such as to teach, to command, to bid, so for example in Greek you might have edidoxen, se, diagignoskein. He taught se, you, to diagignoskein, to distinguish. Then you can have something like tus agathus kai tu kakus, good and evil. And so here, most translations will supply the word me as a second object, so that these are the commandments which the Lord your God commanded me to teach et kem you. And notice there is that atnach there after the et kem, to indicate a pause, so that those words go together. And then he continues, la'asot ba'aretz asher atem ovrim shama le'rishta, which the Lord God commanded me to teach you, la'asot, to do ba'aretz, in the land. Again, translations, the problem with this verse, as you can see, is what to do with all the lamets, the les, how do you render those? Again, most translations for that la'asot, infinitive construct from asa, translate that le as indicating purpose. To teach you so that you might do them ba'aretz, in the land. But again, lamad, I think it's simpler and easier if you just take that as another object of this time the verb lamad. So that Moses was commanded to teach you to do them. All right? Ba'aretz, in the land. And then asher, relative pronoun, literally which atem you, Ovrim, are crossing to there, Shama, with the hey directive from Sham there, let rishta, that is an infinitive construct from yarash, with the third feminine singular suffix. Yarash, it's one of those peyud verbs, so that in an infinitive construct like yashav, it goes shevet. Here's yarash, reshet. And the lamed there probably indicates again purpose this time, in order to inherit it. So the more idiomatic translation would be to which you are going to inherit, in order to inherit. The atem ovrim, again, that's you have a predicate there for ovrim, so where you are going to inherit. Now, verse 2, lema'an tira et Yahweh Eloheka, lishmor et kol hukotav u mitzvotav, asher anoki metzaveka ata u binka u ben binka, kol yamei chayeka u lema'an ya'arikun yameka. Notice there, in verse 2 you have two lema'ans, and those words indicate goal or purpose. And I think that you should probably look at both of those as parallel to each other, so that God commands Moses to teach you to do the mitzvah in the land that you are going to inherit. And here's the reason why. Why or what's the goal? He has two goals. First one, first lema'an. So that tira, again, call imperfect from yare, to fear, so that you might fear et Yahweh Eloheka, the Lord your God. All right? And then he has this other lishmor, again an infinitive construct from shamar. Most translations translate that as indicating means, so that they go like this, so that you might fear the Lord your God by keeping all his statutes. And that is, of course, a possible translation. But again, it's kind of uncommon for the use of le. Le has a lot of uses, but I think it would be better if you make that as indicating, again, purpose subordinated to the lema'an clause. So that Moses' goal is this, to teach you the fear of the Lord. So that Moses is emphasized here in his role as teacher. And his job, what he wants to do, is to instill in people inside the fear of the Lord. The result of that is lishmor, so that they will keep, you see, all chukotav, his statutes, and his mitzvotav, his commandments. All right? So that rather than making that, you show your fear by keeping them, Moses teaches them, one of his goals is to teach them fear so that they will keep the statutes that he's commanding. Metzaveka is again a PL, this time a participle, with a second masculine singular suffix from zava once again, which I am commanding ata you, and binka, literally your son, u ben binka, and the son of your son, kol yemei chayeka, all the days of your life. So that's one goal that Moses is supposed to accomplish in his teaching. The second one begins with the second lema'an. U lema'an, and so that, ya'arikun, that's a hifil from arak, hifil imperfect, third masculine plural. This, in this case, the hifil can be used transitively to make long your days, but in this sense, it's used intransitively. So that, yameka, your days grow long. Just according as Moses, or as God had promised to bless them, you know, if they would keep his commandments. All right, then we go to verse 3. Veshamata Yisrael veshamarta la'asod asher yitav leka va'asher tirbun me'od ka'asher deber Adonai Elohei avoteka lak Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash. Notice the first word of verse 3, Veshamata. It's a vav plus a perfect, second masculine singular. Notice that the accent is on the heavy ending. It's not Veshamata or Veshamata, but Veshamata. And that, again, is the way that the Masoretes indicate that this is what Juan calls an energic vav, or a vav relative. Namely, he wants you to read that word as connected to what follows. He indicates a shade of consecution there, or on what follows upon what he has said. And so a lot of translations will add the word therefore. In other words, what Moses is saying is, in view of all that I've just said, therefore, hear, O Israel. All right, so that's what that vav indicates. Therefore, hear, O Israel. And we get that again in verse 5 to make a very important point. This is what the people's response is supposed to be. Hear, O Israel, veshamarta la'asot, and take care to do. Again, that la'asot infinitive construct is an object of the verb shamar. Both of them, hear, O Israel, and be careful to do. Now, you have two ashers here. And asher is used other places in Deuteronomy and other places too to, in this instance, indicate purpose again or goal. It's a rather unusual use, uncommon use, I should say. So take care to do so that Yitav, that's from the root yatav, again, call, imperfect, peyud verb, and remember, peyud verbs in the imperfect, the vowel is always an a vowel, so you have yitav, it's just like a stative. So that it might go well or be well, leka, for you, va'asher, and so that tirbun, call imperfect from Rava, third masculine or third or second plural, so that you will become me'od, very great. Okay? Ka'asher, as Dibber Yahweh Elohei Avoteka, as Yahweh, the God of your fathers, spoke lak to you. Then you have the last phrase, Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash, a land flowing with milk and honey. It seems to just kind of be there at the end of the text. Most translations then put an in there. They add the preposition in, so that it will go well with you in the land Zavat, flowing with milk and honey. Zavat is a feminine participle in a construct, feminine singular, from the root zuv, to flow. The expression is used several times in Deuteronomy, I think, and throughout the Torah to indicate Israel, of course. The land, in a land flowing with chalav udvash, milk and honey. Okay? Then we get to the big verse. This is called the Shema. Notice that in the Hebrew Bible, if you look very far to the right-hand column, you see that capital Samech. And then you see a little Zion underneath that. The Hebrew manuscripts were divided into different Sederim, meaning sections, because they tried to get through the reading of the Torah. They did Torah readings, of course, every Shabbat, every 3 to 3.5 years. Different manuscripts will mark them differently in different places. But as you can see, in the Hebrew Bible, this starts a new section, section Zion, for the new reading. And as you can see, it's logical to do that as well, because there seems to be a break between verse 3 and verse 4. So we have the famous words, which in Judaism are called the Shema. Shema Yisrael, Yahweh Eloheinu, Yahweh Echad. Notice again the capital letters at the end of Shema and Echad. The capitals are used to mark the beginnings of books, sometimes the middle of books. They're not quite sure why these are capitalized, either to ensure correct pronunciation of the word or just to to indicate that this is a very important passage. One Jewish legend, if you put those, the Ein and the Dalet, together with the Baal Seirei, it makes aid, which is a word for witness. So that's a possibility as well. The importance of the Shema in Judaism is, of course, very well known. Contemporary Judaism looks at it as the confession of the Jewish faith. It looks like a simple sentence, easy to translate, but there's actually no nominal sentences like it in the Bible, and so there's all kinds of different translations. Depending on what you look at to be the subject and the predicate. And so there's different translations such as this. The simplest way is to take it like this. Hear, O Israel, Yahweh is Eloheinu, our God. Yahweh is one. All right, that's the simplest way. Most scholars don't take it that way, though. They kind of make it a lot more difficult. And so they basically put it in two groups. And if you're interested in this whole issue, there's a good article in Vetus Testamentum. It's volume 37 from 1987, and it's entitled The Most Important Word in the Shema, which is the word Echad. And he basically groups the different translations into two areas. The first one concentrates on the character of God. So you have translations like Yahweh is our God, Yahweh is one, or Yahweh is unique. Another group of translations takes it as relating more to Yahweh's relationship with his people, or Yahweh's claim on Israel. So they translate it like this: Yahweh is our God, Yahweh alone. When you look at the different translations in the Bible, you're going to find five or six different ways to render that phrase. But Jansen has a very impressive article in which he argues, and he gives a lot of evidence, that we should understand Echad in the first way as telling us something about the character of God. And he wants to parallel this passage with the beginning of the Decalogue in Exodus 20. So that in Exodus 20, the parallel goes like this. The preamble in Exodus 20, Yahweh says, I am the Lord your God, which would parallel here, hear, O Israel, Yahweh is our God. And then if you remember, at the beginning of the Decalogue, then there's that historical preamble in which God reminds Israel of their redemption from Egypt. And Jansen suggests that Yahweh Echad, Yahweh is one, should be understood in the light of that fact of redemption. Namely, that God's oneness, the emphasis here, is on the faithfulness to his promise. He is one in his purpose. What he promises he's going to do, he's going to do. He's a God of integrity. So that when God reminded the people that he redeemed them from captivity, he was also fulfilling the promises that he said he was going to promise. There are Jansen, both in Deuteronomy and in the whole Torah and in the Nevi'im and Ketuvim, the prophets and the writings, give instances of where Echad is used to emphasize that. And so his point is that when Israel said this Shema, when they said Yahweh is one, it was of great comfort to them because they were reminded that God is not double-minded. He doesn't say one thing or do another, but what he says he will do, just like when he redeemed them from Egypt as he had promised. So, homiletically, I think that gives a good entrance for talking about the gospel, the character of God. What kind of a God do we have? We have a God who keeps his promises. And I think it goes very well then with what follows in verse 5, because again you see that construction with the energic vav, ve ahavta, so that the Masoretes want you to read verse 5 in light of verse 4. So you should translate this. Verse 4 gives the ground for verse 5. Since Yahweh is our God and Yahweh is one, namely the one who keeps his promises, you should add so, or therefore, love et Yahweh Eloheka bekol levaveka uvekol nafshek uvekol meodeka. Okay, so love the Lord your God with all levaveka, your heart, and with all nafsheka, your soul, and with all meodeka, your mind, or might, or force. Meod, notice, is normally used as an adverb, and it was used like that in verse 3. Here it's used as a noun, with all your might or with all your force. And so he continues in the same way, Vehayu ha-devarim ha-elech asher anoki metzaveka hayom alevaveka. And these words, which I am commanding you today, will be on your heart. So notice, also, another point. The people have said that verse 5 is the positive counterpart to the first two commandments in the Decalogue. Remember, the Decalogue says you will not make graven images, you will not have any other gods. Here's the positive aspect of it. Because the Lord has redeemed us, you will love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. Again, here Moses is dealing with the inner person, you see, love, and the words on your mind and heart. He continues in verse 7 the same way. Ve shinan tam levaneka ve debarta bam ve shiv teka beve teka uve lek teka vaderek uve shakbeka ube kumeka. The ve shinan tam is from the root shanan, which in the call means to sharpen. Here you have the pl, second person singular plus 3ms suffix, or 3 masculine plural suffix, and you will teach them, or teach them incisively, if you want to get that pl nuance in there. Levaneka, to your sons. Ve dibarta, and you will speak. Now, bam, with the bait, I think it adds the nuance about them. You will speak about them. To me, that indicates more than just simply repeating the commandments, but you're supposed to talk about them, discuss them. It's a kind of a fuller word that's brought out, fuller meaning that's brought out by that. Be shivteka, that's, again, an infinitive construct from yashav, shevet, okay, with the second singular suffix. Translate those temporally, when you are sitting be veteka, at home or in your house. So when you're sitting down, you're supposed to talk about them. Uve lekteka, from halak, again an infinitive construct, same form. When you are walking, vaderek, on the road. Uve shak beka, and when you are lying down, from shakav, again still infinitive construct. Uve kumeka, again from kum, so when you are lying down, and when you are rising. Continues in verse 8. U keshar tam leot al yadeka vehayu letotafot bein eineka. And you will tie them or bind them leot as a sign on your hands, and they will be as frontlets. Bein eineka, totafot, frontlets on your eyes. U ketav tam, and you will write them al mezuzot, on the mezuzotes, beteka of your houses, u vishareka, and at your gates. And as you know, later Judaism took this literally, and during daily prayer time, twice a day, they would tie the little phylacteries on their arms and on their forehead as signs. And the phylacteries contained this section of scripture, a section from Deuteronomy 11, Exodus 13, and sometimes the Decalogue. There are, I think, 4 different ones, and some of those differed. But even if you go to an observant Jew's house on the door frame, the mezuzot, they will have little box with those words in them. As far as your homily is concerned, the Shema is a good place to start, and then from there, what does God ask of us in our response? And I think it's interesting, the Old Testament reading the week before here is from Jeremiah 31, in which God tells us he's going to make a new covenant, and he's going to put the law in our hearts, you see. What we can't do, love him, you know, he wants love, he wants our hearts. The Lord, by in his grace and mercy, does for us. There. Okay? Questions? Yes?
The anger in the first part of the correction, is there a way to relate that? In particular, I guess, it seems like we always want to get away from God's anger. Is it anger that comes?
Which verse are you talking specifically? Let's see. Yeah, he hasn't said anything about that.
Oh, the fear of the Lord.
Yeah, I think that you should take fear not just as trembling, but as that whole concept of the right mind and attitude towards God, which I think includes faith as well. So it's not only just trembling in fear, which is an aspect, but in a fuller sense. I better leave room for the New Testament. Sorry about that, Jim.